Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this evening I'll continue on the theme of the hindrances in meditation, the idiom that's used by the Buddha to describe the hindrances is that which obstructs awareness and weakens wisdom. It's a good description of the things that the Buddha calls the hindrances, hindrance of sensual desire, hindrance of ill will, hindrance of sloth and torpor, hindrance of restlessness, worry, and hindrance of doubt, wavering. So these are the qualities of mind that obstruct the ability of the mind to sustain awareness and to be strong and firm in wisdom, discernment. It weakens the wisdom of the mind. So that in meditation we need to put attention on the dealing with these hindrances skillfully. It's one of the things that the Buddha talks about is the what we like the feeding, nourishing of the hindrances, and the starving of them, the cutting off the sustenance. And we tend to sort of feed the things that end up obstructing us, and then starve the things that we should be giving nourishment to. Like this, starving the factors of enlightenment. So it's the attending to what we're feeding, how we're nourishing it's like the I keep one of my pet peeves in the monastery is people who feed the dogs all the time and come around. You feed them and they hang around. You end up with pet dogs that you have to deal with. And you end up with dogs howling and barking at everybody who comes in the monastery. Just don't feed the dogs. Let them go. And if you don't feed them, they won't hang around. And it's like the hindrances. You don't feed them, and they don't hang around. Yeah. Or you have somebody shows up, some visitor, some guest who you don't particularly like or want to have to deal with, and sort of invite them in for coffee and feed them cake and give them all sorts of things, and well, they'll hang around. It's not strange. So that the same thing with qualities of mind. That learning, well, you know, what is it that's the nourishment of that hindrance of sensual desire? Then when the mind attends to that which is attractive, it's interesting, is one sees it as appealing, and it that feeds that sort of the desire mind. Oh, I like that. I want that. That really. That's really fascinating, and that feeds the desire mind. So that in meditation, you're really learning how to attend to the things that help to cool the mind and settle the mind. The themes of contemplation that are maybe more sobering and they go against that stream of desire. That one of the chants that we do that the Buddha says we should be contemplated every day. Just that, I'm saying I'm of the nature to age. I've not gone beyond aging. I'm of the nature to sicken. I've not gone beyond sickness. I'm of the nature to die. I've not gone beyond dying. We bring those kind of reflections up, and direct attention to those more sort of sobering qualities. Then that has the tendency to attenuate the desire mind, attenuate that seeking gratification and stimulation, and so that allows the mind to settle and become cool, because when the mind is functioning from place of sensual desire, then it's this sense of seeking, looking, desiring, wanting, craving, and it's not really satisfied by anything. It's like when you notice when we're eating. How the mind, we'll have food in our mouth and chewing it, and the eyes will be looking at what's next. what can I get now that will satisfy me? And of course it's a constant shifting, moving. So it's not settling. It's not peaceful. It's not mindful. So that obstructing, it obstructs awareness, obstructs mindfulness, and weakens discernment. Because when the mind is not settled, it's not steady, then it's difficult for it to discern clearly. Recognize that say the tools that we're using, bringing up and say that sense of feeding or starving the hindrance, not giving it what it wants or what it craves, is giving the mind an opportunity to come to a place of balance and composure, and get it settled, being settled. And the hindrance of ill will we feed it, nourish it by attending to the those things that bring up sort of resistance and that we say we bump up against, we don't like, it's there, that we feel obstructed by, and then that sort of moves into irritation, aversion, ill will, anger. So that to recognize, and then so that to be turning attention to the things that are that nourish the sense of sort of acceptance or a softness, a gentleness, and so that those the qualities of loving kindness, of compassion, of sympathetic joy, of equanimity. These are the qualities of mind that are there's not that sense of there's a quality of acceptance. There's not that sense of aversion, irritation, or that sense of resistance, not wanting, or pushing up against something. It's more of an inclusive quality. It's bringing in, a gathering in, and that is attenuates the hindrance of ill will, so that there's these different ways to hold the mind, depending on the sort of the predominant mood of the mind. So that if the mood of the mind is one of desire and the hindrance of desire, sensual desires coming up, then you actually you put up resistance. You turn attention to something that is sort of blocking the flow of desire. Whereas that if the underlying sort of mood of the mind, that kind of tone is one of aversion and ill will, irritation, then you want to be nourishing the quality of acceptance, of gathering in. So you have to recognize clearly, well, what's the state of the mind? What's it being conditioned by? Because if we don't do that, then we tend to, say, operate from the our preferences or our ideals. So that then either the mind sort of, well, I like this kind of feeling of acceptance and gathering in and this sense of warmth, appreciation. But then if the mind keeps going to sensuality, then it gets trapped in that, it gets caught by it. Remember one time there was a monk who I knew, he out of kind of idealism, he just kept using the the say like objects of say of unattractiveness and the contemplations of the body, contemplations of death, and he's just getting more and more morbid, and he by nature he was an aversive type. He was very sharp, aversive, abrasive, and it made him even more so. And you know, he really would didn't he didn't he you know, he just thought that say contemplations and cultivation of the nourishing of loving kindness and compassion was really for. It wasn't for him, but that was really what should have been cultivated. And so that's what one's attending to is that which really supports and nourishes wisdom and awareness, those bright qualities of mind, when the mind is able to be attentive and steady. So that this understanding, using our time in meditation to really contemplate, well, what is the conditioning factor in the mind? What's pushing the mind into its either it wholesome states of mind or that which are unskillful, unwholesome. Trying to understand the underlying hindrance or the strength that we should be cultivating, those cultivation of the say of loving kindness, of compassion, or in the same way say with the hindrance of sloth and torpor. That when the mind turns to dullness or to kind of lassitude, to sort of that sort of sleepiness, drowsiness, yawning. And there's a certain kind of pleasure in that. I remember one time this novice we had at a monastery, and there's a yeah there's a saying that from the Dhammapada, so there's no greater happiness than Nibbana. And this novice was supposed to be helping out at one of at the abbot's kuti, cleaning up and taking water up there, so he went, he got made it out there and sort of did a few little odds and ends, and there was another novice with them, and they ended up just sort of falling asleep in underneath the abbot's kuti, and the senior monk, and he heard them sort of rouse themselves sometime later in the afternoon, and the novice sort of you could see, almost hear him sort of just that yawn, give a big stretch, "Oh, there's no greater happiness than sleeping." The novice's Nibbana. The Buddha says that is a that's a hindrance. And so how do we, bring attention to exertion, to putting forth effort, bringing up energy, brightening the mind through energetic states of sustaining attention, because it takes energy. It takes a certain energy, and once one is skilled in that, has cultivated that, and one sees the benefits that derive from bringing up energy, then sort of going against and say not nourishing sloth and torpor, then it becomes quite natural. But it takes some time to recognize, because there's that habit in the human condition of just following what is easiest, the sort of the path of least resistance, so that to bringing up the one goes against that tendency by say putting forth effort and overcoming the tendency to sloth and torpor, to lassitude. And one experiences the fruit of that, and the mind becomes brighter. There's a very satisfying feeling in the mind when one is able to sustain a sense of alertness and awakeness. Really being awake for the, whether it's meditation or whatever one's doing. There's a sense of satisfaction, happiness that arises from that. Sort of waking up to our life, really. That restlessness as a hindrance is when we attend to the things that agitate, make us fretful, tend to worry about things, then there's this restless sort of energy enters into the mind, and that really does, it really obstructs mindfulness awareness, weakens discernment, weakens wisdom, and it not feeding the mind in that way with what can go wrong? What am I missing? What is problematic? Because there's this restlessness that goes into the mind all the time. It's like the story I like to tell of the Winnie the Pooh, the Pooh and Piglet walking through the 5-acre wood, and middle of a storm, the wind is blowing, the rain's coming down, and Piglet's getting really worried that something disastrous is going to happen, and there's going to be, and finally sort of bursts out and asks Pooh, what will happen if a branch falls down or a tree falls down, crushes us, hurts us? And Pooh sort of went really quiet for a while. I said, well, what if it doesn't?